News Radio WGPF Congressman John Shimkus on the other end of the line. John, it's good to speak to you again, man. You all right?
I am doing fine, Tom. It's great to talk to you, though.
You know, this week has been, well, I think there were a lot of expectations, but there was so much focus on George Herbert Walker Bush and then, you know, the House getting back to business. But what can you tell me? You know, because, John, I always assigned a connection to you, to the Bush family, primarily to, not to George Herbert Walker Bush, but his son. Because his son, you know, is the president of the United States, calls up John Shimkus, says, John, I know you've made a commitment for term limits, but I want you to stay because we need you. And I always remember that conversation when you and I had it some years ago.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. First of all, you know, George H.W. Bush was a class act, and I did get a chance to briefly meet him when I was campaigning way back in 92, and I think I posted some photos of this big rally. It was a different era in Illinois. It was an era in which we were a competitive state. We weren't broke. The state fairs, plural, were both big deals, right? The Springfield one, the Des Moines State Fair, they were places that you need to go and be involved with. And so there was a big rally up in Springfield and Coliseum, and it was just a memorable moment when I got to meet him and Barbara Bush, but attend that big rally too. That was phenomenal. Then his son, you know, campaigns and shows up again in Springfield, and I get a chance just to say hello. And then as you're right. I mean, I was actually on Air Force One where he pointed at me and wiggled his finger and said, "Come over here." And we were in the hallway of this big plane, and he asked me to reconsider. So, and then I took the whole summer off, not off, but was thinking about it. And then, come the end of August, he then summoned me back and my wife to the Oval Office to say, "Well, what are you gonna do?"
Right.
and so we decided to stay, and I'm glad I did. I love the job. We work hard. There's an important aspect of seniority and being in positions to get things done. It'll be even more important now with the House going, the Republicans going in the minority, to have good relationships with the majority party out of respect and hard work, and hopefully limit some of their damage or compromise to move legislation that we both agree to.
Which we'll talk more about in a couple of moments. But the House earlier in the week getting this temporary funding, you know, and I think this was grossly misrepresented in many cases, maybe for the sake of brevity. When they talked about a government shutdown, they were talking about selective departments like Homeland Security. There were many other government entities were already funded. This, when they say government shutdown, it was, I don't know, maybe three departments, something like that?
Well, we've passed five appropriation bills, and they're signed into law, so we have seven remaining. And then in some of those seven, there may be a couple different agencies and big ones and small ones and stuff. So I think that's a good observation that Department of Defense was funded. That is half of the discretionary budget. Health and Human Services is another third. So if you're just doing percentage-wise, we were only talking about, I mean, what we're fighting over now is probably 25% of the discretionary federal budget, which and then even the CR, I mean, because of the funeral and the timing and all the events, it was just, and then what does it look like when these guys are trying to get to Texas and trying to get to D.C., and can you really get anything done? The answer is no. And so that's why we actually pushed back. We were hoping to get out, be done by December 7th, and then December 13th. Now it looks like we're going to be until December 21st.
Right. Now, on December 21st, do you expect a debate, an argument, or approval on $5 billion for the wall? Because so many people are saying the week before Christmas, this is going to be the big vote. And, you know, a lot of people saying not only does this involve, of course, Congress itself, but a campaign promise on the behalf of the president.
I think the president is adamant that he has money for the wall, and I think that's $5 billion. Now, does that mean that he's going to get $5 billion and stretch it over 3 years and, you know, what, however the permutation is, $2 billion up front, and then, you know, 1.6, and then 1.4. I'm not sure, as you will know, and as you have observed, that when you have to compromise and you have this 60-vote challenge in the Senate, you both sides got to save some face. So the question is, how does President Bush walk away with this thing? I got $5 billion for the wall, and that's, I've talked to a few senators on a lot of different issues. This is their and his primary focus.
So December 21st appears to be the big one. Some news this week, this morning, 155,000 jobs added November.
Yeah, you know, and that's at what, 3.7% unemployment, and 3.5 is almost defined by economists as full employment. So now we're getting to that point of, you know, how much can you grow when you're at, in essence, full employment. I guess, well, the other...
John, I want to interrupt here real quickly, because you just touched on something I think is very important. The numbers that we've seen unemployment, a lot of people, including political people as well, and pundits and talking heads and experts, said that 3.5 was unattainable, that we would never see the unemployment rate go that low again. I think that's worthy of note.
Yeah, and I thanks for you know, raising that, because that's what I've always been defined as, quote unquote, full employment. You do see people now looking to go back into the workforce, which is good. And but you know, the stock, there's some uncertainty, obviously, in the economy right now with the president and the trade war in China and the tariffs and the no tariffs and the
Federal Reserve,
the market.
Because the Federal Reserve's talking about raising rates, I think, next week.
Yeah, but people got to remember, when they decide to raise rates, that means they think that the economy's cooking too fast, and so then when they have rates higher, then when the economy slows down, they can lower the rates, and that's kind of their job. They're an independent agency. We can't influence them by votes or by presidential declarations. They are tasked to manage that. So when they raise rates, that's a signal that they believe the economy is growing strong, and they're, believe it or not, probably to manage it and slow it down a little bit.
And then, of course, you got this 90-day truce, and people expected details, and the ink wasn't even dry on the fact that we had a truce. And defining where they were going to be working, China made some really good noises. United States made some good noises, especially when it came, China in particular, saying, you know, agricultural products, and which is important, of course, to your district right now. But that 90-day truce, well, the warm and fuzzy glow from it did not last long.
Did not last long, but I think it's always hopeful that when people are talking instead of just not talking, and they seem to be trying. The administration knows the stress and strain they put on agricultural America. Our country understands the theft that China has done in intellectual property and the manufacturing sector, and, you know, from the Metro East area where they dumped steel to close down steel mills. So this is very complicated, and the president's in it to win it.
You know, you mentioned steel. Alliance Steel in Illinois is moving 25 miles to get into Indiana to Gary. We forgot, $19.7 million or something like that investment. So you see steel come back, and they look at the future, and they go, not in Illinois, we're moving.
Well, yeah, taxes and worker comp, and that's what, you know, Rauner, with all his flaws, tried to fix. And, you know, now we have a new regime coming in, and I'm not, maybe Pritzker is like Nixon going to China. You know, let's hope he can reduce the tax rate on corporations and address workers' compensation and hold these jobs. But I'm not holding my breath.
Right. And when you see in the House and these moves towards leadership posts and the shift and the Democrats appointing here or there, what activity are you seeing right now in the House as a result of that shift in power from the November election?
Well, I've been through it before, so I'm kind of watching the new members and members who have been a minority. They're thinking things are going to be hunky dory and everything's going to be fine, and don't worry, they're not going to be as bad as some of us old timers tell them. And we're saying, well, wait and see, because you totally lose the control of the agenda. I mean, so what gets on the floor is up to probably Speaker Pelosi. And, you know, what goes through the committee and what's the focus. And so, you know, what do they run on? They run it on abolishing ICE. They ran on impeaching the president. They ran on raising taxes. That's what we have to look forward to in this next area. So what the House did, now we have a leader, a Republican leader, that's Kevin McCarthy, and we have a whip, and that's my roommate Steve Scalise. And they have to manage us so we are the loyal opposition, and we raise concerns to legislation that we don't think is in the best interest of the country, and we cast our no votes appropriately. So we that's the role we play. Fortunately, we'll have a bigger Republican Senate. People forget that. And we will have a President Trump. So the Democrats in the House, they're just one leg of the stool. And, you know, the national media covers them like, well, there's going to be a sea change here of policy. And my guess is it'll look pretty similar to the production that we've been able to do.
Is your expectation from the Democrats in the House progress or persecution?
Well, there's a real rift. It's interesting to watch. There would be if Anastasia Ocasio-Cortez, she's the new phenom from the New York City area, and the progressive left, they're really putting pressure on the old timers. Want to have a select committee on climate, and they, you know, obviously they want to do they're negotiating to do, you know, Medicare for all and all this other stuff. So it's some of the, you know, the old timers are saying, you know, they know that this three legs of the stool. They know that it's not, you know, what comes out of the House then get the president will automatically sign. So that's the real when people are focusing on the House of Representatives, that's the internal game. And of course, Pelosi has to gather the 218 votes. She did get voted to be on the, in essence, the ballot on the floor by the Democrats by a pretty, you know, obvious sizable majority. The game now is, can she lock down enough to get the 218 votes?
Before I let you go, John, you've been working on something else, and I haven't seen it get a lot of sunlight. And you and Representative Flores first started releasing a draft of the 21st Century Transportation Fuels Act. And it was interesting when I was reading this about you want, in particular, the standard change for manufacturing on when it comes to motors, engines, that they can use blends up to 20% ethanol.
Yeah, it's really changing. I've been dealing with this with Bill Flores really the whole 2 years, along with all the different interest groups, which would be the Corn Growers, Renewable Fuel Association, AFPM, the automobile manufacturers, the retailers. And the basic premise is, shouldn't we get our best liquid engineers, transition fuel engineers, and our best engineers who manufacture engines and say, what would be the best fuel to put in a vehicle to get the best mileage and the best air emissions and stuff? And there's a dispute about that, but for implementation's sake, we've come down on a real octane number of 95. And that would then, for a lot of parts of the country, that would facilitate a 20% ethanol blend because it's the cheapest octane enhancer. So it's been an interesting exercise. We do have draft legislation. We're going to have a hearing on that December 11th. Obviously, there's not time for us to move something to the floor, but it is a point of debate and discussion by the stakeholders, and we'll see what happens next year.
And I'm curious about this, especially now that we know for the first time in 75 years our net exporting, we are now energy independent for all practical purposes in this country for the first time in 75 years. This free price of oil and low gas prices, will that hinder your ability to get this ethanol legislation passed because everybody says, oh, yeah, oil's cheap. Why are we worrying about this?
Well, that's the real threat to because I like what I remind my friends in the corn growers and the renewable fuels is there's two big threats. Is one of the reasons why the ethanol has a stake in this is because, quote unquote, the mandate was placed because of a fear of the loss of imported crude oil. So now those who say, well, that fear is gone, we don't even need the mandate anymore. That's why we moved to a science-based piece of legislation on octane, so that we can walk away from this energy security debate and move forward. The other thing that has a play in this is the electric vehicle movement. It is coming. We might not see it in rural America for a long time, but there's going to be more and more electric vehicle penetration in this country. And guess how much gasoline and ethanol they use in those babies?
Right.
None.
Yep. and then of course we got to raise prices on taxes on gas. I mean, they're already talking about that in Illinois when it comes to infrastructure. We have to have it for it doesn't matter whether we have a lockbox amendment in Illinois. We need more money for roads. And of course, when that inevitably comes up, they talk about the price of gas and electric cars. So, Congressman John Shimkus, John, before I let you go, your expectations, your hopes, your maybe even preconceptions on what you see in 2019.
Well, first of all, I mean, we're going into the holiday season, and Tom, I'm not sure if this will be the last time we'll talk before Christmas, but I want to wish you and all your listeners a Merry Christmas. Also, let's remember our men and women deployed throughout the world, away from home, many in harm's way, having been overseas on Christmas, away from family. It's a special time to be with your colleagues. But it's also sometimes a lonely time being away from family. So, and then we'll just go back to work. I've got committee responsibilities. So we've got a great district and people who need assistance, and we'll be at it in 2019.